And you are listening to the Dead TV Podcast, and I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Zeneca.
And tonight on the Dead TV Podcast, on this Christmas night, happy holidays, Mr. Zeneca.
Oh, happy holidays to you too.
We will be discussing the episode.
The name of tonight's episode is Night Stalker.
Night Stalker.
This was an unaired episode.
Yeah, this was cut out of the production. I can't find any information about why it was unaired, other than the fact that the show was probably canceled. Maybe they were airing them out of order.
I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, but here's the little synopsis of the show. In a hospital for the criminally insane, a violent psychopath is forcibly embraced by a rogue kindred, but then escapes, going on a murder spree, terrorizing the city. Julian and Frank are forced to work together to hunt them down. Daedalus falls in love with a human nightclub singer and, using alchemy, gains adherence to experience real love, which he'd lost hundreds of years ago. Dun, dun, dun.
So, are we trying to say that, like, other vampires can love because, I mean, Julian clearly loves Lillian. He loved Alexander. He loves Caitlin. He clearly loves Frank.
Yeah.
But Nosferatu can't love? Is that what we're saying?
I'm not sure that they're meaning that they can't love, but it's awfully rare. Because the Nosferatu clan is so disfigured, you know, the actual transformation takes weeks and twists their bones and wrinkles their face and gives them slanted bald heads. Like, it's horrifying, even though in the television show, the amount of deformities that Daedalus has is big earlobes and a bald head and a pronounced brow bone. That's really about it. They're usually described far more monsterly. For him to be able to find love in this kind of twisted stalkery way that he does.
Yeah, I have many notes on stalker syndrome and, like, lady, call the police.
Yeah, I'm serious.
Like, Jesus Christ, this is as bad as, like, a Christmas movie I just watched with Amy Acker, who weasels her way. Amy Acker, for people who don't know, totally vampire-related, because she was on Angel as Fred. She weasels her way into this rich guy's, well, he's not rich, he's, like, he's a decent dad running a soup kitchen around Christmas time, into his life, because her mom is going to cut her off. So she, like, starts stalking him and his daughter. And the only sane person who realizes this woman is, like, up no good is his bitchy current girlfriend, who's being portrayed as being, like, the most horrible woman on the planet Earth.
Oh, jeez.
Don't ask me why I have seen this Hallmark Lifetime Christmas movie starring Amy Acker. Maybe because she's in it. I don't know.
Oh, and you're all Christmas out by now.
Yeah, there's a few more Christmas things I'm going to be watching, but they're probably just YouTube review things later on tonight because they're kind of funny and they poke fun at the stupidity of Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I think later we're watching the Pee-wee Herman Christmas special.
Oh, my, that is a classic one. Have you seen the current Pee-wee Herman movie that's on Netflix?
You know, I haven't. I've gotten some mixed reviews on it, but have you seen it?
I did. I actually kind of enjoyed it. It's not as good as Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and that's really what they make it out to be because it is a road trip movie again. As Pee-wee tries to get to a birthday party of Joe Manglioni or something. He's the Magic Mike guy, Magic Mike XXL. He's the werewolf from True Blood, which I know you didn't watch. But if you know Magic Mike, he's Magic Mike.
Okay.
You might know him as another character coming up soon, as he, I believe this has been confirmed, he is going to be playing Slade Wilson, a.k.a. Deathstroke the Terminator, in the upcoming Ben Affleck directed and starring in Batman movie.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's pretty interesting.
Yes, this is the first live on-screen, big screen, not television. Deathstroke has been on the small screen on Arrow and a couple other shows over the years, but this is his first big screen appearance of Deathstroke the Terminator.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
Which, by the way, his parody counterpart has already had a movie in theaters this year, a.k.a. Wade Wilson, Deadpool.
Excellent.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, so a little bit of super-duper geeky news right there.
Yeah. We need okay, Kindred.
Yeah, Kindred. Okay, so what vampire clan do you want to cover this week? Because you always seem to cover one every week, and there's like two kind of on focus of this episode. There's the Nosferatu, because Daedalus's story takes up half the episode, which then they collide at the end, and then of course the Night Stalker guy is a Gangrel.
You know, actually, I want to cover Nosferatu.
Okay.
Because I think the Daedalus plotline on this episode is adds a lot of color to his character. And
he's so pale.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Nosferatu, and I even have a little bit about their origin story.
Now, if I'm wrong, if anyone can correct me in the comments on our Facebook page, but when the episode opens up and they're like kind of scanning this guy who's like all acting kind of weird at the club, I believe this actor who plays the Night Stalker was, I definitely know for a fact that he was on Friends, and he played Chandler's roommate after Joey left, and Chandler got a new roommate, and he's kind of a psychopath in that episode, and he was on ER, and he stabs Noah Wiley nearly to death, as well as like another character who had been on the show for at least 3 seasons, and he kills her in one of the most heart-wrenching, like emotionally impactful episodes of ER I have ever watched of that show. So this actor has played psychos plenty of times.
Wasn't he also the big baddie on Hero?
The guy who plays Spock currently.
Ah, yes.
Yes, that is not him.
No, but it's the same type of style of psychopath. Character for Starkweather here.
Yes, Starkweather. That is his. Who? Okay, Star Wars fans. Starkweather, Skywalker.
Yeah. So, Dr. Chris, do you want me to tell you the origin story of the Nosferatu clan?
Yes. Why don't we do that when we get to Daedalus's creepy stalkerness?
Okay.
Got it. All right.
So let's get in on this episode.
So they basically are trying to figure out what clan that this guy is in. Now, you thought that maybe Kindred can, like, sniff each other out and figure out their own clans, but Cash needs to get, like, really, you know, into his life in order for him to do that. And he really wants to get into this guy's life with some of the most nail on the wall, slightly homoerotic wording of like, I know what you want and I can give it to you.
Yeah, especially when they're like pressed over the table, Cash is on top of Starkweather's back. I'm like, I can get you what you need. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Cash is into all sorts of things. He's into Julian's niece. He's into crazy psychos.
Well, you know, he's a Gangrel. You know, animal instincts.
So Crash tries to make friends with him as like a drug pusher.
It starts to explain a little bit about what's going on, but of course, Starkweather doesn't really want to hear much about that. And just kind of dismisses him until Cash really physically shows him how to feed.
Yeah, when they're both locked up, and in one of the, again, this is the weirdest things. How many psycho wards do you know where people are in straitjackets, their doors are left open? Now Cash is okay. They realize that he is not crazy, and they can't prove that he cut his own arm open because he's a vampire, so he healed it up. So those reports are obviously thrown out the window. So he's allowed to walk around the facility, but he still has to be held for X number of hours. But they leave Starkwalker, the psycho, I keep missing his name up, his door like wide open. What?
Yeah, he's in, like, Observation Room 4, and, you know, it says right there above the door, Observation Room. Yet Cash lures in one of the orderlies for them to feed, and no one sees this. You know, there's no cameras on an Observation Room. I find that a bit unbelievable.
Yeah, and then he's like, here, orderly, come here, I need you in here. The three of us are going to close this door, and three men are going to be necking each other. Yeah, okay.
and he just walks out in kind of a daze, and Cash is saying how, you know, this is how we do it. You know, you take only what you need. And there's that moment where the character clicks in on, like, oh, I understand now. And then that immediately turns that psychotic behavior into an act of drive to commit mass murder.
Yeah.
Which, that's that moment right there, and he just finally understands of what he is and the power that he has.
When he says more immediately, every time someone ever says, I want more, more, I immediately think of Oliver Twist.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Oliver Twist was a vampire? Can you imagine if Oliver Twist was a vampire? Why hasn't anyone made that yet?
It'd be like Damien with fangs.
Yes! Hello, Hollywood! Listening to this podcast, make this happen. You've done mashed up genre stuff before. Why not Oliver Twist as a vampire?
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, by the way, I know the movie is garbage, but totally read the book. The book is awesome.
Cool.
Sasha's pissed that Cash isn't still in lockup because Julian wants to keep him away, and she totally calls him on his bullshit. Mm-hmm. She needs him. Because she needs, you know...
She needs a D.
She needs a D. Okay, now, when they finally get in, Julian's got some command authority everywhere he goes. He's like, open the door, because I'm in charge, because I'm Julian, the vampire of the city.
Yeah. You know, every opportunity Julian has to explain to Frank about the pull within the vampire community, it's like, oh, we've got people everywhere. And he just completely states that everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And in this episode particularly, while I didn't think that the waitress was a vampire in previous episodes, in this episode particularly, she was saying how, you want to keep your illusions. And
yeah.
She's talking about coffee. But it just made me think, maybe that's a vampire there.
Yeah, and also, like, unfortunately, this is, as far as I checked on IMDb, this is the last episode we see of the vampire waitress, which, like, sucks, because I would have totally loved that to have been, like, a recurring thing, you know? Maybe she flashed Frank the eyes, because they don't have fangs. So, but then Julian's just, like, there. Poof, bam. I'm like, wow, he's Houdini.
Well, I actually think that they were trying to do, poorly orchestrated, but I think they were trying to do a mental telepathy technique. Because if you'd notice, the lighting shifted very slightly from the kind of over table spots on the tables, and then you could see the blinds behind Frank. And they kind of dimmed into a little bit of a gray.
Yeah.
And so I think that was just him projecting into Frank's head.
Oh.
In this conversation. So that's why he kind of poofed there.
The lighting effect reminds me of, have you ever watched Gotham?
I have browsed it, but I do not have regular television, so it does not come up on my dial.
When that show is probably completed, like, it's done on the air, that's when you should go back and watch it, because the fans will have picked out the best episodes and the episodes that are just like, oh, how is this show still on the air? One of the episodes has Harvey Dent in it, long before he'll become Two-Face, and every time he's in lighting, half of his face is lit, the other half is in darkness.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm. Okay.
Now, just going back to the sanitarium really quick, how the fuck does the damn vampire get out of that hole that small?
Yeah, I know. In psych wards like this, it's just like a prison. You know, no one is going to have any opportunity to escape. And when we see the observation room, the metal grate mesh was ripped off, and this hole, which can't be more than like 8 inches to 10 inches wide in a square. This hole is too small for his human body. So it's either, if they were you know, thinking about it, maybe he transformed into a bat or transformed into vapor and left this room.
Because he learned that so quickly, being a vampire for less than 24 hours.
True, but you know, this is television. Things happen pretty fast.
And then he writes on the wall, Blood Brother, which is...
Blood Brother. Yeah. That's a continuing message throughout all of his serial killings, is the word Blood Brothers. And that's specifically pointed at Cash himself, because he talked about the bond of the blood and taught him how to get the blood, so therefore kind of led him in this path. Although I think that kind of message is a little bit displaced, because if I was him, I'd be more pissed at the girl that forcibly turned me into a vampire.
Which, by the way, they never... Okay, if you have the box set that me and Mr. Zeneca have, you get to watch the deleted scene where we learn who the girl is. We don't learn her name, but we get to see her. But the episode, the actual episode as it airs, they never, ever show us who the vampire is that turned Mr. Psycho into a vampire.
Yep.
Yep. And she's in like, she's in a cutscene. Like, she shows up. She like kind of gives like Frank an eye, because Frank is introduced to her as well. And Frank's like, this isn't my world. This is Kindred world. So I'm gonna walk away and let you just murder this girl.
Just walk away.
Basically,
yeah.
And they like literally, she like gives Frank this like help me pleading eye, and then that's it. I mean, that's the only thing we get about this, like who this gangrel is that betrayed the masquerade.
There is a slight moment there that at the very end where Frank kind of stops and turns slightly, but not enough to really look back at where she was. And in the time that he was walking back to his car, this gangrel vampire chick, like, she bolts. You know, she you know, shoves Cash and just bolts. And both Julian and Cash just stand there.
I thought maybe she was going to run into Frank. Like, the scene would cut to her running into Frank, and Frank, like, her pleading to help Frank to help him, and he'd just be like, I got to maintain this really crappy relationship with Julian. I can't help you.
or even just have another scene behind of that with both Julian and Cash just appearing right in the direction that she's running.
Yeah.
That's a classic vampire thing. But, no, I mean, it was a deleted scene, so they didn't enhance that.
No. When they go back to Julian's house and they're going through like about this this loose psycho gangrel, I love Julian like exploding at Cash, like, what are you still standing here for, right after telling him what to do?
Yeah, because Julian knows what he's going to talk to him about. You know, it's going to be about Sasha.
Yeah.
And, you know, because Cash says, I need to talk to you about Sasha. And he's... Julian's not an idiot. He knows what's going on between them. They're lovey-dovey, they're kissy-faced, they're fucking all over his castle.
They're probably fucking, yeah. I mean, you cannot tell me that is not happening yet. I mean, he's a vampire, he could probably smell the sex.
Yeah, no doubt about it, but he was not in the mood to deal with it at that time.
No, not with a psycho rogue vampire running around the city, which is going to expose the masquerade.
So he calls the Blood Hunt, ushers Cash out of there. And on the deleted scenes, we actually see an extended version of that set. Julian goes into some of the reasons behind why he's hard on Cash and why he doesn't really want Sasha to be embraced. And it's kind of a touching set of scenes, but I understand that adding this information might have been a little bit slow.
It gives Archon something to say, too, because he pretty much had nothing to do with this whole episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives Archon, like, a line, which is fine, because he's, like, the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the show. But they also kind of point out, like, all the relationships that everyone has with humans. Like, Frank, Alexandra, Frank and Kate, Sasha and Cash, Daedalus and the club singer, Julian...
The journalist,
which I said Frank and Alex, sorry. I meant Frank, because... Just for everyone who's paying attention to the show, in the first episode we went through who like the cast members are. Julian's real name is Frank in real life. So when I say Frank, I sometimes get confused in my head when I'm referring to Frank the character, not Julian's real identity in real acting life. But they all have a human person they want to bang.
They all do, and they're Julian talks about the difficulty he has with letting go of his last remaining human heir.
Yeah.
Now we saw in one of the first episodes Sasha at her grandfather's funeral. So they're our family, but Julian specifically says that they were scattered and gone. So those are what I would consider to be extended family. So maybe he's talking about his last relative, blood relative, human relation, more of a close-knit family instead of the cousins and second cousins and the ones that kind of go on the sides of the tree of family relations.
Yeah, they're the one. She's like immediate connected to his grandchild, where everyone else has been, the bloodline's been diluted through, you know, getting married and getting married and getting married and getting married and having more kids that are not connected anymore. So this is the last one that's truly extended to it. And speaking of the bloodlines, when Stalker kills his dad, it reminds me of the Menendez brothers.
Oh, yeah, because of the repeated abuse.
Yep.
Yeah, Starkweather mentions that in a counseling session at the hospital, he mentions that he was locked in a closet for 2 years because he was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're talking about how years of systematic abuse from people and his family turned him into this psychotic monster. It's not that he became a vampire and then thusly became a monster. He was always a monster.
Yeah, due to his parents. Which, if you, for our listening audience, the Menendez brothers are infamous, for killing their parents. Now, with no evidence to back this up, having killed their parents, they claim that their parents both psychologically, physically, and possibly sexually abused them over the years. Now, one of the Menendez brothers, the father of the Menendez brothers, he was a Hollywood executive responsible for many films being put out in theaters. And vampire-related, one of the films that unfortunately got hurt badly in distribution because of the death of him, of the producer, Mr. Menendez, he, Fright Night Part 2, the vampire movies, legal rights status and distribution status over the years has been so convoluted and lost in a sea of red tape. You can find out more about it on the You're So Cool, Brewster, the Making of Fright Night documentary, which is currently out. You can go order it, going into a little bit about the Menendez brothers and how they're connected to Fright Night Part 2, one of the best female vampire stories ever.
You know what that particular scene in the garage reminded me of?
What?
American Beauty.
Yeah, which I know the film. Okay. I've seen it a few times. Just refresh my memory.
Well, the father is very militaristic, and so the dad had that hairstyle that was high and tight, crew cut, wearing a drab green tank top, and just had this very stern, blocky look to his face. That type of energy reminded me completely of American Beauty and the neighbor's father that was putting this tremendous pressure on his son. So
yeah, Wes Bentley, the son being Wes Bentley and the father being Chris Cooper.
Yes.
Had a big problem with a lot of things, and he was Chris Cooper himself was a closet homosexual in that movie because he tries to come on to Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, and that's part of the struggle that the father was going through all of his life and saw it and projected it onto his son, and that was a major point in the entire movie and kind of ties in what that movie means in context. So Starkweather actually finds his dad, talks about this magic trick where the person's in the trunk and the swords go in the trunk, and voila, the crime scene the next day. The father is in a sword that's been punctured with all kinds of, puncture devices, pieces of metal, knives, swords, steel bars. It must have been a mess in there, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. And if we'd been on HBO, we would have totally seen it.
Would have been interesting to see. crazy, just yeah. for my morbid curiosity, but yeah, I don't think it would have been good for audiences.
Julian and Caitlin have another date, which is just kind of pacing for the episode because their relationship really doesn't have any, like, it doesn't do anything for the plot of the episode other than, like, Lillian mentioning the whole thing about, like, vampires wanting humans for companions and not just staying within their own kind. Like, Lillian's like, stay with me, do not try and go after your, you know, your cub reporter that you've hired as the city editor.
And some of that is Lily's jealousy coming out as like, the jealousy of, there must be something about me that I'm not providing and trying to convince him otherwise.
Yeah.
I've been by your side, I'm loyal, I'm, you know, this, that, and the other to try to coax the other person back when Julian is quite happy pursuing this woman who is now his employee.
Yeah.
Which, legally, that now put him into this really tight situation, you're not supposed to have affairs with your employees.
And that's brought up in a later episode, too, that it's mentioned that, you know, she got her job by sleeping with the city editor, with the owner of the newspaper. And then we cut back to the girl with the voice, who, for some reason, I kept thinking she was blind, and I kept thinking of Ben Grimm dating Alicia Masters, a monster dating a beautiful blind woman. But she's not blind. She's just an artistic singer who probably has depression, probably has anxiety, probably has suicidal thoughts put into her music, and this is what speaks to Daedalus, because the Nosferatu were all about that sort of thing, because they're being like very emotional creatures because of the way they look. I mean, if I was a Nosferatu, I would think about killing myself, because you with the exception of Daedalus, by the way, he's pretty handsome. Other Nosferatu look like the versions from the Max Schreck movie of 1922 Nosferatu film.
Yeah. And those protruding teeth, the long stretched claws, very gruesome or terrifying. So it lines up with a lot of more folklore depictions of vampires.
Yeah.
So he becomes enthralled with the singer, and the song that continues throughout the episode that she sings right at the beginning is House of the Rising Sun. And she sings this song, which is popularized by the animals, in this very haunting, slow way, so it kind of draws out each word a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's what puts that sorrow in those tones that Daedalus just finds enrapturing of his attention.
You know, she, like, continues having this conversation with somebody that she can't even see, that is clearly stalking her and leaving her notes and stuff. Call the police, woman, and thank God she finally does.
Yeah, although it took her actually sleeping with him and then seeing him the next morning to actually call the cops.
Wait, does that happen right then? I thought that was after he does his little alchemy thing that fails and Lillian's just like, go buy a wig and you'll be fine.
Well, here's what happens. So, Daedalus, he gets enthralled with the singer.
Yeah.
Keeps visiting her, and she can sense his presence, and then she starts talking to him. And she clearly says that she is afraid. You know, that you're frightened, that she's being frightened, and please leave. And he, in that moment, comes up straight behind her and exerts his force of will with... Yeah, you know, I think it's like potence or something like that. It must have some sort of presence to pull her. And I'm not sure whether that pull was for him to calm her down so she would listen to him, or to get her enthralled by him.
Now,
I don't know what was the motivation behind it, but it definitely had a purpose.
Now, when they sleep together and he shows up wearing that awful looking wig, by the way, was that a potion he took and he grew hair? Because when he wakes up next to her, he's like, oh my god, I'm bald again. And you're just put your wig back on.
On the deleted scenes, you get an idea of what might have happened, because one of the deleted scenes is after the fallout happened and they slept together, and then he dashes off in the morning because she finally sees him. The deleted scene is that he comes back to the theater, or the Haven, while she's picking up the sheet music at the very end of the episode. So, in that moment, Daedalus has a small jar with this pink see-through liquid, and he has that moment where it looks like he might drink it or thinking about drinking it, and he doesn't.
It's hair tonic. Because I'm like, I would, listen, because if the tonic he's drinking, because again, that thing doesn't make any sense to me. So he drinks that stuff, it doesn't work, but then he shows up wearing a wig, but then he wakes up next to her and he doesn't have the wig on, or it's the hair fell out because the spell wore off. I don't understand. Just put the wig back on, dude. You'll look fine. And then she sees him.
That was the spell.
Okay, it was just a terrible looking wig that it made me believe that she is just so high in love that she can't figure out, like, the guy that...
You know, this entire Daedalus plot line
sucks.
Is Stalker's wet dream.
Yeah, this is not becoming of his character, by the way. Later on, he has a much better Stalker thing with a kid, but that's a whole other episode.
Yeah. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
The Stalker's wet dream is that you find a woman that you are enraptured with, and you watch her all the time, and you learn everything about her, and you start doing these nice things, and she actually appreciates it. And, you know, eventually they'll get to talking, and even though that you're shopping at every store she's going in, that every little thing in her life that you have your hand in, she'll turn around and find that to be a comfort, and that you're protecting her for some reason, and then this woman will just bring you into her bed after not even seeing you and spend all night with you. That's like the Stalker's wet dream.
Now,
that's what happened in this episode.
Also, I need to point out that, without getting into the specifics about how you have sex with somebody, because we all know, when Frank has sex with Alexander, he definitely has this, like, oh my god, I'm just, like, addicted to her now because I've been inside her, and she has vampire stuff running through her entire body, including any part of her body down below. So, when this woman sleeps with Daedalus, she doesn't have this, like, over, like, oh my god, he's been inside me, and I'm now, like, just enriched with, like, this high of, like, wanting vampire things.
But if you notice, when she did contact the police, there was no mention of her getting together with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't report a rape or anything like that.
But
here's
the thing.
She just reported someone in her house.
I don't think that she thought this is the guy that she just slept with. I think she thought that guy, because don't forget, later on in the episode, she's like, you just left. And then he's like, you know, I was just afraid of what you would think of me. She thinks the guy that she saw in her room is the Night Stalker going around killing women.
Yeah, she completely believes that the hideous person that she saw is the Night Stalker.
Not the guy that she's been secretly infatuated with her, that she just slept with the night before. I don't think she thinks those are the two same things, right?
I refuse to believe that she's that stupid. Because if someone is going to be sleeping with you all night, and then you wake up and you see someone dash out of your room, that clearly was the person that was there, not just some weird guy walking into the room after your sexual partner leaves.
And Frank calls Daedalus the next morning when Caitlin's there and everyone else is there, including Sunny, the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
I was like, hasn't he met Daedalus yet? Or is he only contacted with Julian and Lillian?
I think Sunny is trying to throw some red flags on the court, and it's just, oh, it's Black Lagoon, it's not really that important. Don't really pay attention to that much, so.
Yeah, and by the way, they cut over to the crowd scene, and Crazy Vampire's there, and he grabs some guy and just starts talking to him, going, that wasn't the Night Stalker, and she's lying, and I'm like, who the hell are you talking to? You just grab this random old man on the street and walk away? Was he your buddy? What?
I crazy people do crazy things. He takes from the situation that someone else might be taking credit for his crimes, and that upsets him.
Oh, yeah. You don't piss off a serial killer that way.
The Night Stalker, instead of just calling him Blood Brother or something else, because he keeps writing this message all over town. From what I can piece together, there are 7 killings in 7 days, and the guy spent 5 days in a different psychiatric hospital other than the one that we saw earlier in the episode. And it takes about a week to change. So he got attacked by this girl, the gang girl, and then got admitted to a psychiatric hospital, got diagnosed with schizophrenia, got released, then went to the Haven, met up with Cash, then they went to another psychiatric. So by this time, he hadn't eaten in almost a week and a half.
Okay. So he's just, like, plowing through town with all of these, just, like, eating everyone he can get his hands on.
Yeah, so a week and a half, he starts with the doctor, and then he goes from the doctor, perhaps straight to his dad, because he's doing it in order of the person that he needs to strike the vengeance with most. In one of the scenes when Julian and the journalist are looking at these pictures, and Julian's talking about maybe they should soften the news, and she says, no, it's the news. All along the wall are crime scene photos.
Yeah.
So they say that there are 7 bodies in 1 week. So a week and a half, he doesn't eat, and then goes on a 7-day feeding frenzy. So it's the doctor, dad, there's a black figure that's kind of distorted, a guy on a tiled floor that's kind of chubby, a woman with white pants and blonde hair, there's a girl in a bathtub holding a teddy bear, and a girl in a miniskirt with a black skirt and red hair. So that's not all of the mention, that includes all of the mentioned victims there.
The one thing I was trying to piece together is, okay, so they leave the police station with, the killer, the crazy vampire leaves the police station with the singer. We cut over to Julian's place, and it's like, there seems like there's so much time that should be, so little time that should be passing from however long it takes to get from the police station to the club, that they have all these transitions of all these other scenes. They really pace it out to not let this girl get killed by Starkweather.
Yeah.
She should have been killed by Starkweather. I mean, like, I think it would have made for a much more prominent episode and, like, more of the, like, how tragic life is for the Nosferatu. If Starkweather had killed her, and then maybe Daedalus shows up to be the one to kill Starkweather.
Well, there is that deleted scene at the very end that I mentioned where Daedalus goes back and sees her. It would have been powerful if that scene, Daedalus goes back, sees her, you know, they have kind of a snip, and she runs it back out, and then Starkweather takes her as a hostage in front of Frank and then kills her right there. That's usually a villain go-to behavior, but That was edited out. We don't really see the singer anymore when she goes into the back. She doesn't come out when she hears a huge explosion from the phosphorus gun that Frank shoots. Or not Frank shoots, but Starkweather shoots.
He got the gun from the last episode, the episode 2.
Yeah, it's the same gun.
It's the same toy-looking gun.
Yeah, but it produces a huge explosion.
And I love Frank's reaction to Starkweather of, like, I am the law! Okay, Judge Dredd.
In this episode, he gets kind of clocked along the head with it before strung up by his neck.
Which,
so not a good time for Frank.
No, which, when Frank kills Starkweather, he calls, when Julian kills Starkweather, Frank calls him Buddy!
Yeah. It's a BFF moment.
It's a major BFF moment.
That's when they officially kind of made that bro pact.
Basically.
Together.
Well, something I forgot, I didn't write down, but I remember it in the back of my head. Julian finally admits to Frank why it is that he will not. Earlier he says, I won't allow it. I'm the prince of the city. No one's going to kill you. He finally admits to Frank that it's because of Alexander. I'm held by my word to Alexander that you will not get killed. I let her die so you could live because that's what she wanted. At the same time, let's face it, you have a cop that's a vampire working for the local police department, San Francisco Police Force. At the same time, you probably could use a human cop, too, that at least knows your secret, that's willing to help you, and what better person than the partner of the cop that you sired? Did I say that right? Sired, right? Yeah.
Sired.
Okay. Okay. Just want to make sure I got my terminology down. I wasn't, like, reversing it. And then Julie and Kate have dinner, and that's it. And their whole, like, thing is not, like, the focal point romance of this episode. That kind of comes later on, but...
I think the big romance of this episode was for Daedalus. You know, if we were going to see a further... expansion of this particular, you know, storyline with the singer and Daedalus was kind of going on from there, it might have been nice to have her become kind of a friend to him, but it really works in the for the typical storyline of a Nosferatu's life. Like, it's almost as if a Nosferatu can't get a break, which is why they all kind of work in conjunction with each other. So there's not a lot of infighting within the Nosferatu clan.
In the books, do the Nosferatu, out of all the... Okay, let me restart over again. In the books, the Vampire Masquerade clan guides, are the Nosferatu the most controlled clan, do you think, by their primogen?
I'd say they are. You know, they're the most humiliated. They do suffer a lot at... Like, Clan Toreador despises them. And that's just basically because they're aesthetically unpleasing and they are untrustworthy.
Really? Even though Lillian goes to Daedalus as a friend, and is it because they're both primogens that she has respect for him and the fact that he lives in Julian's basement?
I think it's more the fact that you know, Daedalus is kind of Julian's lapdog. The Nosferatu clan, their biggest strengths are their ability to fade into the shadows. So their obfuscate discipline causes them to become huge eavesdroppers. They know exactly what's going on in the city at all times because they have to. You know, it's a point of a Nosferatu vampire survival to know who's going to get the pitchforks and where are they coming from. They have their ear to the grapevine on a lot of things just simply due to that ability to fade into the shadows. They have animalism, so they can turn into animals quite easily. And when Daedalus is talking to the singer, Elaine, he's just behind a screen, but she can't find him. And that's due to that obfuscate, that clouding of the mind, so that he cannot be seen. The Nosferatu clan itself, because the change takes a few weeks, or a couple weeks, and it deforms the bones, it does all these really terrible physical deformalities that it usually causes psychological trauma.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you basically, you know, if you were, like, beautiful, then you turn into, like, this, like, the most monsterific of the vampire clans.
Yeah, and you know what? The Nosferatu clan enjoys doing that to people. They will take a beautiful, vain person and turn them into a Nosferatu to kind of, you know, take them down a few pegs. Most of the turnings that I'm usually familiar with are either done under force or under trickery. It doesn't really seem that people want to be a Nosferatu, but the type of person that are attracted to Nosferatus are usually the psychologically damaged already. You know, they've had some sort of issue, anxieties, depressions. They don't have much to live for in life, and then they go through this change because another Nosferatu thinks that this person might be benefited by the removal of their physical characteristics.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bit of a Taoist thought about it. You don't have beauty to rely on, so therefore you must use your intellectual mind and your survival abilities to really get by. So the Nosferatu clan bands together. Now, the creation of the Nosferatu clan goes back to the days of the Bible.
Oh, wow.
This is in the clan books, that the first vampire was actually Cain. as a punishment from God for killing Abel, his brother. So he was cursed with immortality to live with the guilt of killing his brother. He was cast out of Eden, and Cain ended up siring three childers. So there was Enosh and Irad. Those are two boys, and then the girl, youngest, Zillah. Now, they all lived in the first city. And the first city is described in the books as this very sinful land with vice, and it was a very dangerous place. A huntsman, unnamed guy, ended up tracking down, because he was supposedly the huge, successful huntsman. He can hunt any sort of big game. He wanted to track down the world's monsters. So he tracked down Zillah for 100 days.
Zillah, not Godzilla, but
not
Zillah.
Not Godzilla, Zillah.
Okay. Not, and by the way, not to be confused with Zillah, the monster that appeared in the Matthew Broderick movie, which is what the Japanese call that monster so they don't confuse it with their true version of Godzilla.
Yeah,
little Godzilla trivia there for you.
okay, so once he tracked her down, because even though he couldn't see her, he could trace her footprints in the dirt.
Okay.
So he tracked her down. He drove a wooden spear through her chest, but that didn't stop her. She ended up breaking the spear into two and then slashed him across the face, and that wound from the slashing never healed. So in her rage that she was struck with this spear, she threw him with such strength that when he crashed on the boulders, his body was broken.
Oh my God.
His mind, his body was broken. And Zillah was so impressed with his bravery that she gave him the power of blood. So she embraced him right then and there and then named him Nosferatu.
Okay, wait a minute. I am flipping through my copy of the Bible, which I happen to have handy right here next to me at all times, and I don't see any of this in the Bible. Where is this possibly information can be found, Mr. Zeneca?
Well, this is in the Player's Guidebook.
Oh, okay. I thought it was in the Book of Nod, but...
no, this is in the Nosferatu clan books.
Okay. But isn't this also probably in the Book of Nod that comes with our DVD set?
You know, there is some Nosferatu stuff in there, and they do talk about Cain, but it doesn't go into this type of depth.
Okay. Now, just for anyone who's not a huge Bible aficionado, the Land of Nod is in the Bible, hence where the game players who created the rules for Vampire the Masquerade got that word from.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's mentioned in Genesis, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nosferatu was not a twisted Nosferatu clan type of person that we would see now. Cain actually did that to Nosferatu upon seeing Zillah's creation. And so he was very pissed off that she were to a child and, you know, Nosferatu, and after breaking his body and all this. So she cursed him, and that curse twisted his face and fused his bones. And so since his body was broken, it just kind of kept into this state. And this curse is what gives them the curse of their looks, and that instant repulsion, because, you know, they have an attractiveness of zero. So that is, in a nutshell, is the story of the first Nosferatu vampire.
Now, because the show does not cover a lot of the origins of Cain and stuff like that. In fact, I don't even think that's ever even mentioned in the show. And we're only in the third episode, so I don't know for remember. You just said no, you don't think so?
Yeah, no. The origins of vampires aren't really covered in the show.
Okay, that might have been something they could have gotten into in later seasons if it had continued. In an upcoming episode, we will go into a little bit of detail about a bonus material that's on the DVD box set involving the actor Jeff Kober returning to play the character Daedalus. All the actors, he's the only one who actually reprises the role of the vampire he played on the show. But the story of Cain that Mr. Zenick is talking about has been used in many different ways of fiction, and it connected to my other podcast, Supernatural Creatures and Lore. Just really quick, Cain had been revealed on Supernatural, the TV series. The reason why he killed his brother is because his brother was talking to Lucifer, and he wanted his brother to descend to heaven, so he murdered his brother so his brother would not be tempted to get involved with Lucifer.
Pretty fucked up.
Yeah. And Cain is then given the mark of Cain, which is later on revealed by Death himself, the Grim Reaper, that the mark of Cain is a key that unlocks the prison for the darkness, as in when the Bible says, and then there was the darkness and God created the heavens and earth and that whole thing. The darkness wasn't just a thing, it's actually God's sister.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Dark in the light.
Yeah, yeah. So why wouldn't, yeah. And they cast a very beautiful woman to play the darkness on Supernatural for the entire last season of the show. That whole Cain thing is carried over in a couple different in interpretations of how, like, vampires are created. I think Vampirella has some connections with, like, Cain and her mother, Lilith, giving birth to like 100 vampires a day. They obviously change it based on the whole, or you know, the mythos of Lilith in the Hebrew Bible. There's mention of Lilith. speaking of which, it's also, by the way, the second day of Hanukkah, and when this podcast does go on iTunes, it will still be Hanukkah until next Sunday, January 1st, 2017. So happy Hanukkah to all of our Jewish listeners.
Happy Hanukkah, everyone.
Yes.
Happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas, because today is Christmas Day.
Yes, the day we record this is Christmas. And happy winter solstice. What is it you call it, Mr. Zenica, because you revealed a little piece of information about yourself to me over the phone this week.
Yeah, I'm actually not a Christian. I am a Dionysian Wiccan. And so what that means is I'm a witch. I celebrate the turn of the seasons and celebrate the typical Wiccan holidays, Yule being one of them. And I, my patron god is Dionysus. So I celebrate my god with excessive vices. Read into that how you may.
Oh my. And we will probably have some coverage of witches and stuff in some show that we do coming up. Most likely Constantine. Mr. Zenica, and we will probably have Constantine run into the spring solstice. So at that time, Mr. Zenica can go into a little bit more about what her religion and witches and things like that will be covering around the time of the spring solstice, as we will be neck deep in a show that deals in magic and witches and things that are not vampires, basically. I don't think Constantine ever actually touches vampires, so...
No, I think it's only a cult lore.
A cult lore show, so... But definitely that show is more tied into Mr. Zetica's religion than Kindred the Embraced. So when we get to Constantine and we run into the spring solstice, Mr. Zenica will go into a lot more detail about all that stuff that I am completely just not even knowledgeable about. There was no yum moment in this episode. We had plenty of the bromance moments, but there was no yum moment. However, one thing I forgot to mention in last week's show, real quick, just before we leave, is that Mistress Zenica has her own yum moment, as she's connected to Vampire the Masquerade in more ways than you could possibly imagine.
Oh, and you're going to make me tell the story? Okay.
It's on our Facebook page anyway, so.
It is. Twist my arm right out. Okay. Yes, when... I was a young model, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines video game. I was the one, I should say, I was one of the spokesmodels that was at the E3 convention, and I got to meet a whole bunch of people, and ended up whipping Dave Navarro's ass right on the E3 floor at our booth. So I was dressed in a Toreador outfit with a black vinyl buckle dress and hair held high with a riding crop.
Oh, and, my.
Very, very hot. And we were passing out these temporary tattoos. So I said to Dave, do you want to be bitten, beaten, or both? Because I was allowed to actually bite people at the convention.
Oh.
It was delightful. I met a whole swath of people. Dave actually said beaten. And so he just got right down on the floor, ass up, perfect position, and I end up whipping his ass pretty hard, you know, for about 3 times. At the time, I didn't know it was Dave Navarro from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I didn't know that. He looked familiar, but I couldn't place it. And then one of the other models, after the experience, she ran up to me like, "Do you know who that was?" I'm like, "No, it's just this cute guy." He goes, "Oh, that's Dave Navarro from the Red Hot Chili Peppers." And I was like, "Oh my God." Had I known who it was before, then perhaps I might have been a little starstruck. But I ended up also at that same convention meeting Tony Hawk, who's a great guy. Absolutely great guy. And Snoop Dogg, which was not.
And Tony Hawk had just put out his very famous PlayStation video game, I think, at that time that you're talking about, back in 2000 or 2001?
The 2000, I believe. It's on. We have the link on our Facebook page, and you can see a picture of me actually on the page with information for Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines video game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's me on the far left in the smart black vinyl outfit.
And if you compare this photo of Mrs. Zeneca to pictures that I have in her most recent interview on the Dr. Chris Radio Horror Show, Mrs. Zeneca is a vampire herself because she hasn't aged in 16 years. After 2 children, she has not aged.
Oh, you're very kind. Yeah, aged, but my waistline sure has.
I don't think so. I think anyone who goes to your upcoming January event, which you should plug right now.
The idea is Walker Weekend, and it is a movie marathon, a zombie movie marathon that involves role play. So it is what we call an immersion event.
Uh-huh.
Now, instead of setting the date for January, because I got a lot of pushback from people on that date, we are doing it on a kind of a Kickstarter basis, where I'm going to put up the fun page and whatnot, but everyone buys their tickets, and then collectively we say what day we want to do this on. So it gives everyone a power of say, and if the final date you cannot go, then the money is refunded to you, etc. But for this type of role play type of event, it really needs kind of a threshold of people. Like, if I don't have 20 people at least, then I can't do the little interplays between people. The whole game of it is that there's zombies and there's survivors, and it's in the world of, like, Fido.
Okay.
Where the zombies have collars, and then I bang a gong, and then that means all the zombies' collars are off, and they are to bite the nearest person closest to them.
Okay.
And continue to attack people until I bang the gong again. So then it ends up being a last one to survive the night type of game. And depending on how people want to role play, I might add in little tidbits of information like, "You're a zombie rights activist." You know? Like, "People are really uncomfortable that there's zombies even here. You just stole the last Twinkie."
Oh, you know? Lord.
Yeah, little type of messages so that people can role play and really play it up. So it's like Nerf guns and zombie movies. It's pretty fun. And then at the end of the night, whoever becomes a zombie gets a meat buffet at the end.
Oh, cool. So, wow, that's fantastic. You can go to elegantlykinky.com to get more information about the event, correct?
That information will be up soon. It'll probably be posted in January when we get our fundraiser page up and running for it.
Cool. Don't forget, you can check us out as well on Facebook at the Dead TV Podcast, as well as the Radio of Horror page, and then find us on Twitter at the Radio Horror Shows or at Chris D S A V. And I'd also like to thank Jess O'Lantern for creating our theme song, the Dead TV theme, which is the name of the song. And there possibly might be an extended version of the song. I don't remember what she said about that, but this is the this will be the running theme for the Dead TV Podcast going forward from here on out. So very much thank you to Jess O'Lantern, who happens to be, by the way, the co-host of the Dr. Chris Radio Horror Show, which is on tonight, and she is actually a guest on the show talking about her own music career. So again, thank you very much, Jess O'Lantern, for creating our theme song.
Yay!
It's absolutely, it is it's got that the right type of spookiness to it for our show.
I agree. I agree, and it can go with any show that we review in this genre.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely. So, thank you again, Jess, very much. And we will be back in a couple weeks as we record the next episode, which I believe is the one I've been really waiting for, is the Beauty and the Beast episode. Not Beauty and the Beast. It's the Romeo and Juliet episode where Cash and Sasha's romance comes to... Does it come to fruition? Do we finally get them together? Or does it end tragically for these love-struck young lovers? We have to comment on several points of topic in this episode that are a little bit too much on the nose, some of which are a little bit... And some of the music in that episode, too, is very, like, romantic. but we'll get there. So, but I've been really looking forward to that episode.
Everyone, stay tuned. You know, it'd be exciting.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Thank you. I'm Mr. Seneca.
And I'm Dr. Chris.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. I think that's it. Okay. No more holidays. Not till Valentine's Day, at least. All right. Good night, everyone.